everyone, and welcome to episode 34 of season 9 of Movie Around Midnight, the Daily Podcast, where we yippee-ki our way through the Die Hard duo, the last two terrible films in the Die Hard franchise, Die Hard 4 and Die Hard 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to have to go through the pain of talking about 5 minutes of this movie is Derek McDuff of the Underrated Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Derek.
Thank you. Yeah, excited to be back here, talking about, thank God that we're doing this in 5 minute chunks, because if you had to do like 100 something episodes of this, it would be rough.
Yeah. I would, if I did this one minute by minute, it would be 101 episodes. Yeah, it would be very rough. Very rough.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I'm doing 21 episodes of this movie. So okay, it's bearable.
Much more manageable.
And again, the ideas were just having fun.
Yeah. And this is fun.
So episode 34 begins with Yuri changing his terms, and ends with John and Jack waiting at the subway. So. Yesterday, we basically ended things with them finally getting to the safe house, meeting Mike Collins, and Mike is very adamant in getting Yuri to agree and admit that, where he has this information on Shigarin. This whole file on Shigarin is the MacGuffin of this movie. There's no question about it, but just because we never really even find out what it is. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We don't care. And apparently the characters don't care about it either. That's part of the problem too.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't even actually exist. It's not even real.
That's right. It's a fake MacGuffin.
Yeah.
True. And so Mike is trying to get this information out. And yesterday we ended things with Yuri basically saying to him, look, that you guys are the ones who are going to get me out of here. And, we talked all about the fact that, John keeps saying that he's not involved in this whole thing. And then it starts with Yuri basically saying, only if I can take my daughter with me. Shigarin's people will kill her. He goes, fine, make it quick. And Mike gives him his phone. And then he goes, where's the file? And he says, it's in a vault in Pripyat. But the key is here in Moscow. At Hotel Ukraina. So, first of all, this is very, very strange, the way this whole thing is played out. Okay? Mm-hmm. You'd think that the CIA or whatever spy network this is supposed to be would have somewhat of an idea as to, where these things are. Now, do you know where Pripyat is?
It's in Chernobyl.
Yes, it's Chernobyl. Wouldn't it just be easier for him to say it's in Chernobyl?
Right, yeah. It's you're like, okay, it's being very specific.
He's being very specific. And basically, the idea is to tell, you want the audience to have an idea of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But we don't. I had to go look this up. I'm assuming you looked it up too.
I knew because I watched Chernobyl. That's why I knew. Show Chernobyl.
Okay. No, I understood what you were talking about. I have yet to see it. I started watching it, and the first 15 minutes was just really boring, and I just turned it off and didn't continue it, even though I know I need to watch it.
It's very good, and it also makes you watch this movie when you find out, the conspiracy theory about Chernobyl make absolutely no sense. That happens in this movie, where it's like, they were really responsible, and that how could they even be? That doesn't make any sense.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, a friend of the show, Jake Clued, has been trying to get me to watch it for a number of years. Didn't it come out in 2020? I think it came out in 2019.
2019? Yeah, I think a lot of people, including myself, watched it in 2020 because it was like, what were you else were you going
to
do?
Well, yeah, sorry. You had a lot of time to watch things during the pandemic, of course. And what better thing to watch than a mini series about people who have to abandon their town because of a nuclear power plant causing problems. But yeah, so Pripyat is the city that is the closest to Chernobyl, and basically they had to abandon the city after the meltdown. And But interestingly enough, there were like 50,000 people that were living there when they needed to evacuate it in April of 86. So that you know, they did a good amount of advertising and propaganda to get people to move there. You know, so
Yeah, that's a lot of the stuff that's in the show is like it's all about the people there and like all the like crazy stuff they had to do. It's really fascinating. And I will say, like, on its face, like that's an interesting, unique, cool setting for an action movie is setting something at Chernobyl. Like, I know there's been some horror movies and some video games set there, but I can't think of another action movie that is set in Chernobyl. And I'm like, that's a really cool, interesting set piece. And you know, I know it's not this chunk, but it's like they don't do a ton with it. But at least at this point, I was like, oh, that's interesting that it would be set there. You know, what are
again,
you going to
it's
do
an
with that?
interesting idea, but it makes no sense. I mean, we'll talk about it when we get there, that you know, people they're not really concerned about the radiation and things like that. And
They
they
spray
have
some generic thing in that they're like, this took care of all the
these.
radiation in Chernobyl. I'm
They
like,
have this
really? They
cannon.
could have used that in 86, I guess.
They're right. They have magic powder
Yeah.
that can dissipate you know, all of
Yeah.
that. So yeah, exactly. And then he says, but the key is in Moscow in the Hotel Ukraina, which is also known as the Radisson Collection Hotel in Moscow. And it's a 5-star luxury hotel that's on the Moskva River. And it's known as one of the Seven Six Sisters. And it stands 206 meters or 676 feet tall. It is the tallest hotel in Russia. It's also the tallest hotel in all of Europe, and is the 52nd tallest hotel in the world, which is just
Wow.
amazing that there are 51 hotels that are taller.
I was going to say the other 51 are probably all in Dubai.
Probably. They're either in Dubai or Indonesia or something like that. I mean, again, that's just crazy. And this was a hotel that was originally built by Stalin.
Oh, wow.
So it already gives you know, an idea about how far back it goes. I mean, that's amazing.
That's incredible. And yeah, like as things, I didn't even had no idea that was even a real hotel. I thought they just made up some name, you know? Like I did not know that was a real thing.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't know if they actually filmed it in the real hotel.
Right, probably not. Yeah. Who
That I
knows?
didn't even check to see that,
Yeah.
but you know, still that's crazy. We'll get there tomorrow. We'll show up at the hotel tomorrow. We'll have you know, we'll have John and Jack and Yuri visit that place. So why not? And then Jack just goes, oh. When he figures it. Now, do you think because they have to go to the Hotel Ukraine or because they have to go to Pripyat?
Probably the second one. I think like, oh, go to the hotel down the street. That's not a big deal. Going into Chernobyl, that seems like a problem. Especially since like they don't even cover this in the movie, but they're crossing international lines to get into Chernobyl because it was a part of the Soviet Union, but now, you know, Ukraine is a different country than Russia, and like this is also when like the Crimean War is about to heat up too. So like it's wild that that's like a thing that just gets glossed over.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, he gives him the call, they give him the phone, and he says, make your call. We're going to the Ukraine now. Let's go. And then Yuri takes the phone and it rings and finally it's answered and he goes, it's Papa. And then we can hear a woman's voice on the other hand and he goes, I'm fine, sunshine. We'll talk later. And he goes, listen, I'll be waiting for you where your mother and I shared our first dance. He goes, now, hurry, hurry. You understand? And he hangs up. So again, when you know what happens in this movie, this conversation makes a lot more sense. You know, that he's basically telling Irina where he can be found in order for them to hook up and you know, continue with this very, very crazy and asinine plan that the two of them seem to have. Because it makes no sense from the perspective that, you know, any of the stray bullets could have hit Yuri along the way.
And then, so he has this moment that You know, because I watched the whole movie and then I watched the minutes that we're talking about. And looking and that see, right after the conversation, he kind of looks at himself in this mirror. It's
That's
this
right.
contemplative
That's
look.
right. He looks in
And
the
I'm just
mirror.
like, what was, because like in the moment, I'm just like, okay, like what's happening here? And then it doesn't, like, it's because we know that obviously, spoilers, he's like a bad guy. He seems like he's like regretful or something. Like, I'm like, but at this moment, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know how to take that upon rewatch. I'm like, is he feeling bad about like that he's betraying these guys? Because he doesn't seem to have any remorse later
No,
on. Like, why does he have this soulful look? Like, what
I
is
don't
the
think
point
so
of
at
that?
all. I think I also have that in my notes, that it's just really, really strange that he has this long look in the mirror that, again, as I agree with you 100%, you would have that if a character is regretting something that he did. But Yuri has no regrets here. He has this evil plan that he has put into motion, that basically hinges on the fact that Alec is not a very good shot. Because otherwise Yuri would be dead too, because they keep thinking that you have to kill Yuri, which is also very strange. But I wasn't able to figure it out. I went back and forth over that little shot of him looking in the mirror, trying to figure out what could be going through this evil guy's mind. Because he doesn't like give an evil smile or something like that. It really looks like he's contemplating something, and but he's not.
Honestly,
There's nothing
what
for him
I
to
think it
contemplate.
is and what I think it is honestly is that in the moment, for what we know about Yuri then, that he is he was a bad guy, and then as like he's portraying like he's had all these regrets and wants to like make right with the world, it does seem like, okay, this is a way to tell the audience that like he's gonna be a good, like he's actually a good guy. So it makes sense in the moment, but upon rewatch, it's nonsense because we find out that's not the character who he is, and he's not putting that moment on for anybody because it's just him having a conversation in a language that most of the other people in the room don't understand. So it doesn't make sense in the context of the movie. It's like it's cheating. It's the movie cheating and trying to make us feel a certain way about this character when that's not the way the character actually is.
Correct. They're trying to fake us out here with something that the character wouldn't try to fake us out with.
Exactly.
That's part of the problem here. If the character has a change of heart or something like that, that's one thing. But he doesn't. Again, he's this evil guy who.
And remind me, is this before or after we find out like his whole backstory about how he's allegedly gonna like he's allegedly had a change of heart?
Well, we know that he has a change of heart because that's what Jack tells us. They're sort of like playing
I could.
things out here, but they're feeling it out. We don't really know 100% what's actually going on here. So yeah, it's
So yeah, just messy again.
very, very messy. And then at this point, Jack tries to I guess make amends with his boss Mike, and he goes, "Mike, listen, I'm sorry about this morning, man." And Mike goes, "It's fine. All right, let's go." Yuri like stands up, and then we see Yuri get shot in the arm, and then we see Mike's head explode. So
Yeah,
as we
just
mentioned
bang.
yesterday, the Mike isn't in this movie for very long. I gotta say it's a good shot. I guess that's the best thing I can say about it.
And I guess they were just trying to wound Yuri so they could kidnap him, because like these guys don't seem to know the plan, like his plan. I don't know who's working for anybody at any point in this movie. Like, it's very convoluted, and it's like the masseuse is working for this guy, but the goons are working for this guy, but actually they're working for this guy. So I don't know what that shot on the arm was. Were they trying to kill him and they missed? Were they trying to just injure him? Were they actually working for him? Were they actually working for Alex? Like, who
I have a
knows? Who
feeling that
knows?
the characters don't know who they're working for. Forget about the fact that we don't, because it's really convoluted, the whole thing. Because they also never really explain it well. That's the crazy thing. It'd be one thing if at some point at the end of the movie they would show us how things have played out. Because again, I know you haven't seen all of the Die Hard movies, but in just about every Die Hard movie there's some sort of twist, and that changes everything. The twist here is just a stupid twist. The twist is the guy you think is possibly a good guy is really a bad guy, and that he's, you know, conspiring with his daughter, who's also pretending to be a bad guy with a different bad guy, to save him and, you know, use their magic powder to get rid of radiation and steal things that were left in Chernobyl. That's what it basically comes down to.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's another heist movie, like all Die Hard movies in general are. It, you know, the bad guys are always in it for the money. That's it.
Right.
But it's just really, really strange the way that they do this whole thing. And at this
point, it's bizarre.
Yeah. At this point, Jack just realizes they're completely screwed. And he screams, "Contact! Down! Get down! Go! Get down! Go! Go! Go!" And then we hear the Russian goons start yelling, and then Jack goes, "John, cover! Come on, buddy, go, go!" And I love how they always have in these safe houses, you know, just a little switch that you just flip, and when you flip that switch, it's just going to blow up the entire apartment. You know, they're really good at that, even though, you know, it just blows up all the files, but doesn't affect the, you know, the fact that they're trying to get out of this particular place.
Yeah. Yeah, that's convenient.
Well, of course. It needs to be convenient. How else would the movie work if they didn't do things like that?
And yeah, this is another, we had talked about it yesterday, but like about how just faceless all the bad guys are and how you can name all 13 terrorists. And this one, it's just like, these are just generic guys. And McClane, he's just got his machine. He just starts mowing down motherfuckers. He's like, just starts taking them out. Does not like, I know John McClane isn't like, you know, doesn't always have the most like respect for human life, even in the good Die Hard movies. But in this one, he's just like they're video game enemies to him.
That's
like, he doesn't even see them as, they're just like targets. You know, he's just mowing them all down. He's just like, more bad guy. He just keeps calling them bad, quote unquote, bad guys. It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, in the other ones, it's like they were people to him. Like, Hans Gruber, he was like, "I'm gonna kill you," but like, he saw him as like a human being. Like, these are just generic fodder for him to just like lay just heaps of bullets in.
Yeah, and he really does. He's just you know, we and it's very foggy and everything like that, so you can't really tell exactly how many people he takes out, but it looks like he takes out around five just in the first barrage, you know. And you know, I love the way that movies have realized that the best way to always have you know, bad guys in movies that are basically stuntmen is just have them all wearing masks, that you can keep reusing the same guy. Doesn't really make a difference, and therefore, you know, they're literally faceless. You know. Luckily, John had a machine gun next to him and just starts mowing them down as they're running into the room. And you know, Jack is trying to save Kamarov, and then you see that John just hits even more and more as they're going down. And then after Jack hits the, you know, the booby trap switch, we see a whole bunch of people go flying. Also, you know, outside, you know, standing on the balcony. So again, it's very cool from a special effects and stunt perspective, but plot wise, it's just complete crap. You know, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
And then Jack runs into a different room with Yuri, and he turns over a table and pulls out this rectangular thing that it's actually another thing. It's very cool. It's basically a way to make a doorway out of a wall. You know, you just attach it to the door, attach it to the wall, and it explodes, and then you're able to get through. It creates a doorway for you. And at this time, John is just still just doing his Expendables audition. Actually, wait, was he already in the Expendables by 2013? I don't know.
I think he's in the second one. Like, he's not in the first one. I might be wrong. No, he is in the first one. He's uncredited, but he is in the first one, I guess.
Yeah. And then...
So this is, this is 3 years after Expendables 1.
Right. Okay. And then John screams, "That's right, jerk off." Again, makes no sense. You'd think that he would have a better job at this point. You know, he could have thought of something a little better. And then Jack screams, "All right, let's move, John." John goes, "I'm on vacation."
Again.
He goes, "Come on, time to hustle. Watch your head. McClane, move it." And he goes, 8,000 miles for this.
And you brought up the... Well, you brought up yesterday, you know, or we talked about yesterday, our cops, the cops in the movies, and you know, my number one was Nicholas Angel, and I love that beat in Hot Fuzz where he like shoots the guy in the head and like he falls in the supermarket. He's like, "Did you say anything cool? Did you say like chill out or anything?" It's like, "Oh, you know," it's like his partner's just like, "Shame," and that's such a cliche of like, you know, the bad guy like shooting the bad guy and then saying something cool, and he doesn't even come up with anything cool in this. He just says, like you said, he just was like, "Take that jerk off!" Like he's not even doing his cool McClane quips like he
That's
would in
right.
the first three Die Hard movies.
Exactly. Did you ever see the movie The Last Boy Scout?
No, I never have.
Okay, so that's with Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans, and at the very end, he's like teaching Damon Wayans, you know, when you know that nowadays it's the 90s, and you know when you shoot a guy, you have to say something cool with it. And he goes like he says, if you hit him with a surfboard, what are you gonna say? You can say, "Surf's up."
That's
Yeah, things
pretty
like that.
good.
So it's more than this whole jerk off thing. It's funny that John says 8,000 miles for this. Okay. Do you know the distance between New York City and Moscow?
I have no idea.
Okay. Do you think it's close to 8,000 miles? How's that?
I do not think that's accurate at all.
Okay. So it is officially 4,666 miles between New York City and Moscow by airplane, which comes out to 7,500 and 10 kilometers. You know, so again, it even with the kilometers, it doesn't come close to 8,000.
Right, it doesn't
You
make
know,
sense.
again, I don't expect John McClane to know how far he really went. You know, I don't think he's counting his frequent flyer miles or anything like that. You know, I don't think he's saying, "Oh, good, I get 8,000 miles on my frequent flyer."
See, I was like, that seems very low. Like, I don't know exactly where Moscow is in Russia, but still, like, you cross the Atlantic Ocean and most of Europe. Like, that's interest. That seems like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But again, so for almost 4,700 miles. That's it's halfway. Maybe he's referring to both ways. No, that wouldn't make sense because he hasn't gone home yet. So yeah,
I don't know.
no, I don't know either. And then they show them appear on the roof as they're trying to get out by running across the roof. And then Jack screams, "Get down, Yuri, stay low, head down, come on, go, go." And then John goes, "Safe house, my ass."
Which I was like, okay, I kind of agree with that. Like that is the least safe house I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, seriously. Well, it's because you bring the bad guy in there and he calls his daughter, and within seconds, they already know where they are. Because
They
Moscow's a
already
really,
figured it
really
out.
small place. You know, it's just going down the block. That's it. You know, it shouldn't take it that long.
Which, like, why did they even need to do that though if they were already gonna get them at the place they were heading? Like, I it feels like just so you can have an action scene and take out Michael Collins,
Yes.
you know, like they already were gonna be able to ambush them by, you know, awkwardly standing in a room for and letting them have a conversation and then revealing themselves from pillars. Why do you also need to do this? It doesn't make sense.
Well, because you know they wanted the movie to be extended a little longer, I
I guess so.
And you know they go down this ladder, and then they finally are on the street, and obviously there are no Russian goons around them, and then Yuri turns to John and goes, "He knows how old we are, no?" Now, do you know how old both Bruce Willis and Sebastian Koch were when they made this movie?
I want to say Bruce Willis was in his 50s.
Early or late? What would you say?
I would say late 50s because
Okay,
first Die Hard comes out in
Bruce Willis is
89.
58. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
And Sebastian Koch, who plays Yuri?
I have no idea. I'm going to say
Do you think he's
early
older? Do you
60s.
think he's older than Bruce Willis or younger?
Well, I think he's older, I guess.
He is 7 years younger than Bruce Willis.
Oh, wow.
Even though he
Okay.
definitely looks older. He is 51 in this movie. Now, when they made this movie. Now, or actually 51 when the movie came out. So he was even 50 when they made it. You know, I'm 51 and I'm like, this guy looks 10 years older than I am.
Fair.
Maybe it's the idea that they just have the graying beard type of thing. You know, maybe.
That might be it. It's just the salt and the pepper that throws you off.
Yeah.
He's got more hair than Bruce Willis, so
Okay, but
it's just gray.
that doesn't having hair or not is not going to necessarily be a factor for
I was just
whether
saying,
I was
if Bruce
older or
Willis
younger.
still had hair and it was, if Bruce Willis still had hair and it was gray, maybe we'd be able to tell, but the fact that he's, he's got no hair, maybe that throws us off and
Maybe.
makes him look younger somehow,
Could be. Could be. And at this point, Jack just he can't understand why these guys need to slow down. And then he lets Yuri find a place to sit down. He goes, "Come on, here, sit down. You're all right. Let me look at you." And he looks at his wound and goes, "It's all right. You're fine."
Of course, because everybody's always fine in
Of
this
course.
movie, except for
Well,
the bad guys who get mowed down.
isn't that the way they're supposed to be?
Yeah.
And then John goes, "What are you doing, Jack?" He goes, "Calm down, Yuri. You okay? You're gonna be fine. Here, put this on." John gives him his jacket. Says, "Stay warm." And then they continue their way, and they get out of this area, which actually looks nice. It doesn't necessarily look like the slums, which is what we saw when they actually got to the when they got to the safe house. It looked more like a slum. And then Jack says to he goes, "What was that, John? 5 minutes, 5 minutes. You blew a 3-year op in 5 minutes." He goes, "You're welcome. What do you want me to do?" Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm so f burned. I got no friends in this town anymore. What about your people at Langley? Just give him a call. Just give me your phone. And John hands him his phone and he smashes it on the ground. He goes, "Hey, I got a 2-year contract on that phone." And he says, "What are you carrying? Give me that." And he takes his gun. He goes, "All right. Got any cash on you?" He goes, "Some American money." And, Jack is just not treating John well at all in this case. It's funny that Jack is completely blaming John for this whole thing.
Yeah.
A concerned father who flew 8,000 miles to go save his son.
Yeah. Which, I will say, he kind of has a point. John McClane kind of just comes in here and just immediately screws everything up, like right off the bat. And I know, we find out later on that, it probably would have not have gone well either way, but the extraction plan and everything that was with the drone and everything that was happening, it all kind of does not happen because John McClane is there directly, kind of causing problems.
Right. I mean, my assumption is that Jack would be dead if John hadn't showed up. They would have killed him also.
Yeah, probably the end of the movie goes differently, but I can see why at this point he's really mad at him.
No, again, I can see why he's upset at him, but he doesn't realize that when you're in a situation like this, you do want John McClane there because he's the guy who's going to save you.
Yeah, because he's a
If you want
superhero, he's
somebody who's
invincible.
gonna pull you out of the fire, it's gonna be John McClane.
Yeah.
Even if you claim that you're a Gennaro.
Yeah.
Then Yuri shouts, "What are you talking about? We need to keep on moving." And then John goes, "We have to get this guy to the doctor, to medical attention, Jack." He goes, "The mission stands. Your mission is bleeding out over there. The mission continues. We go to the hotel. Come on, let's move. Let's move. This is nuts. What, you're gonna go out now and kill somebody else now? Why all this trouble for just one guy? He's a political prisoner. Not that you care, John, but it's a matter of national security, all right? We got the goods to stop Victor Shigarin. And we need this to happen. Well, great, Jack. Let's drop him off at the embassy and we can go home. Are you kidding me? After what happened at that safe house? Look, it doesn't work like that, all right? It's a huge diplomatic mess, but I'm a burnable asset. So I now need this file to unfuck this mission. Any more questions? It was, yeah, just one. How come you never called and told me where you were? Like you'd give a So again, this is terrible exposition dialogue, between the two of them, trying to explain to us, who Yuri is, even with everything that Jack just explains right now. And after having read it and having seen this movie numerous times, I still don't quite understand what the whole thing is. Yuri has something on Shigarin. That's it. Or claims to have something on
Yeah.
Shigarin. And Jack
Right.
needs him. And Jack needs to prove this in order to stay alive. Again, I think John's original idea of, okay, let's go to a, let's find some someone who works for the CIA to deal with this stuff here, I think that's the best bet. But he doesn't do that.
Right. He just kind of, they just go cowboy on their own, you know?
That's right. And they show up at like some bus station or something like that in order for Jack to go into a locker that he has a whole bunch of stuff hidden in. We never really see what he has in there. Could be money, it could be passports. It's good that they have it, but it just makes no sense that he's found this place to be able to go get all this stuff. And not only that, he has a bag filled with stuff in there, which again, we don't know where that bag came from and stuff like that. And then we get a wide shot of Moscow itself, and we see a wide shot of the three of them waiting on a bridge. And that's actually how this segment ends. So, is there anything else you want to say about this segment, Derek, that we might have missed
Yeah, the
along the way?
only yeah, the only other thing I wanted to say about this segment, and I could apply it to a lot of the movie in general, but I think it's very evident here, is that it's clear that both this ca the character of John McClane and the actor Bruce Willis does not want to be involved in this script or this plot, and they're just kind of here because they have to be. And it's like, I don't know, like it, that's it's a common trope of like, oh, this character gets dragged up into this thing, and they want to be there, and it, like later on he does say it's fun, I had a bunch of fun murdering all these people or whatever, but he is not ha does not seem like he's having any fun, the character or the actor here, and it's just like kind of a slog, and that's taking the movie down a little bit for me.
I mean, I know that Bruce Willis apparently agreed to do this movie because he wanted something that has, like a father-son type of aspect of it, which again, I've said this before, but I find it ironic that Bruce Willis himself doesn't have any sons, he just has three daughters. But he wanted a movie to show John McClane and his son, to find a way to bond with one another, and why not do it, in radioactive Russia?
Yeah. Just try. They're just once again trying and failing to do the same thing that Indiana Jones did with the father-son thing, and it does not work here because they don't have the same dynamic
Well,
that,
it didn't work in
Pierce
Indiana Jones
Ford and
either.
Sean Connery. Well, I was gonna say I was talking more about Sean Connery and Indiana Jones and Indiana Jones 3, but I would say even Kingdom of the Crystal Skull like works better. I think even Shia LaBeouf and Harrison Ford have more chemistry than Jai Courtney and Bruce Willis
They do, but they both also have terrible chemistry.
do.
It's how do you rate how terrible chemistry? Who has worse chemistry?
I mean, I am a little bit of a defender of Crystal Skull. Yeah, I'm not gonna go on about it, but but I think that this movie is really just trying to replicate the formula of the father-son thing that has worked better in the past for other films and franchises and not coming close.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right. So today's segment, talking about Indiana Jones, maybe it'll be on your list, is
We'll see.
Franchise Fever, where my guest will give their top five movie franchises that have at least four movies in them.
All right, yeah. So my number five is a movie that grew up with me, like a franchise that grew up with me. The first one came out, it was like it's about a kid, I guess, and he's a young kid, and then by the third one he's going into college. I at the same time I was going to college. They've made four another one
Is
since then,
your
so it
name
qualifies
Andy?
for four. There you go, you got it. Yeah, it's the Toy Story franchise. I love those movies so much. They mean something to me. I love all Pixar movies, but there wouldn't be no Pixar really without Toy Story.
Definitely not.
Woody's one of my all-time favorite characters. So is Jessie, and there's and Buzz, and all the other characters are all just so great. And it's a franchise that I think the first three are perfect. The fourth one's really good too. I'm even looking forward to the fifth one that doesn't need to exist, but I'm excited. Like it's one of those movies like. Seeing how Die Hard slowly deteriorated, that never really had that deep downhill decline.
Not yet. Hopefully it won't.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the type of thing that you're supposed to just stop on your head.
Right. But it's one of those things that they've been around not quite as long as Die Hard, but close, you know, or mid-90s, the first one came out, 95. So, you know, they every few years they'll, or, you know, sometimes there's a big gap between them, but they still keep pumping them out like these Die Hard movies, and they still are consistently great.
Right, and it's easier when they're cartoons, because you don't need to, it doesn't matter if the characters age.
Well, you can definitely hear it in like Buzz Lightyear. Like, you kind of just like, oh, there's a reason that they, when they did the spinoff, they got somebody younger to do the Buzz Lightyear in Lightyear.
Well, because Tim Allen was older. Come on.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, so it does kind of still matter in cartoons.
Well, again, they're depicting a character younger, so that makes sense. You know, it's like bringing in River Phoenix to be the younger Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but as I say, it's like, you know, you do start to hear the age in some of the character voices in Toy Story when, you know, it wouldn't necessarily make sense. Like, okay, like Woody was already like, had been around since the 50s or whatever in that first one. He's you know, a decade or two older now, but whatever, it's fine.
Exactly.
My number four is, it's a sub-franchise, I guess, because there's a franchise, but I want to talk about the rebooted franchise, which did just last year finally hit four, and that is the reboot Planet of the Apes franchise. You know, I like the older Apes movies just fine, but I think the reboots really just hit on something just really powerful and universal. Just like through these, especially like the second one is, I think, one of my favorite movies ever. It's just this really great anti-war movie, and it's just these movies about like, you know, differences, like, you know, these two sides that are different and how like they don't want to be at war, and then like people make, like, it's just about human nature and like all this stuff. And it also has like apes riding on a horseback shooting machine guns amidst all that. Like, it's this great philosophical movie, and they're also some of the best action movies around, the Matt Reeves ones in particular, 2 and 3. But then the new one that's set, you know, many hundreds of years later, is an interesting movie about like legacy. And it's a really interesting kind of like legacy sequel in that respect of like, it follows on the traditions and how those original traditions get distorted and stuff like that. So I just love those movies. And Andy Serkis's Caesar is just one of the all-time great performances. You know, it doesn't get as much respect as it should because it's mocap, but he should have won so many Academy. Like, he should have won an Academy Award.
He should have won it for every Gollum.
Well, he should have won it for Gollum, but he also should have won it for Planet of the Apes. Like, he just never gets the respect he deserves because so much of his stuff is mocap.
Right.
Which is why I think a lot of people talk about how good he was on Andor, because we actually got to see his face for once. So yeah, just phenomenal.
I actually just rewatched that today.
Oh, wow.
Watched
nice.
Both seasons today.
So, yeah. Nice. It's a great show.
Yes.
Yeah. My number three is, we were just talking about it, Indiana Jones. I love the Indiana Jones movies. Especially 1 and 3, I think, are just perfect films. Like Last Crusade, Raiders of the Lost Ark, absolutely incredible. I think that, you know, but I also love 2, 4, and 5. Like 4, you know, obviously is the worst one. I'm not crazy, but I still even like that movie. But yeah, Indiana Jones is just such an incredible, iconic character. You know, it's a movie that I could rewatch really any of those at any time and just have a good couple hours just hanging out watching them. And I cannot even tell you the amount of times that I've watched Last Crusade or Raiders of the Lost Ark, because there's nothing wrong with them. They're just like impeccable films that completely are endlessly rewatchable.
Yes.
My number two is the Middle Earth franchise. And yeah, this one is another one where it's just a perfect trilogy. We just talked about Andy Serkis and how good he is and how he probably should have won an Oscar for that. A lot of people could have won Oscars for that. This famously, these movies did win a lot of Oscars, especially that third one. And then you have the Hobbit films, which are, you know, varying degrees of good. You know, I think there's definitely some good stuff in those. And then, of course, there's the War of the Rohirrim. Mostly, I think the first original Lord of the Rings trilogy is great. But, you know, to get that franchise goal, I will put it at, you know, call it the whole Middle Earth trilogy, because there's more.
Yeah, understood. All right, and your number one.
Yeah, my number one is a big franchise. It's the mega franchise of all franchises, the one that is just changed the box office and everything. And, you know, maybe some of the movies have not been as good as of late, but it's been so good for so long, and it contains so many franchises of its own. That's, of course, the MCU. So many great characters. You know, I'm a big Thor fan, but I love Spider-Man, and I love the way that, like, they ended the quote-unquote Infinity Saga And maybe I could have just put the Infinity Saga, but I'll count the more recent ones too. And how it's like, how did you? People were amazed when, in 2012 when they were like, "Oh wow, they had this crazy team up." You know, the Avengers. That was such an insane thing to happen, that you took this God of Thunder and a guy who built himself a suit and somebody who shoots arrows, and you put them all on the same team, and that movie worked so well. And now that's just like normal. And then you like, you know, flash forward to 2019, and you give like a capper to like what 15 years of movies of all these different franchises and characters, and that movie works so well. And they're still doing it, you know. And I'm, you know, Thunderbolts just came out, and that was actually a really good movie. So I'm excited to see what they do next. Hopefully they can, you know, they have been introducing a lot of new interesting characters. I'm excited to see what they do with those. So I just love Marvel movies. I'm gonna be honest. I might be a very basic take, but those are good movies.
Yeah, okay. That is very true. All right, excellent. So now we will play the game State Your Motto. Your state today is Louisiana.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Okay, first choice is A, it goes by growing, B, union, justice, and confidence, or C, liberty and prosperity.
I don't think it's the Union one because they were part of the Confederacy, if I'm correct. So I'm gonna say I'm gonna stick be consistent and go with option C again.
Well, you should have gone with your first option. It was B, union, justice, and confidence.
Okay, dang. Well, for two on those, I guess.
All right, well, you'll have another chance again tomorrow.
Right.
While you play another game, we'll see how that one goes too. All
Right.
right. So, Derek, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Derek McDuff?
Yeah, you can find me by looking up Underrated Movie Podcast. It's on all the apps, so wherever you're listening to this, it will be sure to be playing there as well. If you want to find me in the real world, you can actually check if you're heading to San Diego Comic-Con this Thursday. As you're listening to this, I'll be there hosting a panel on the value of a director's cut. That's going to be at the Neil Morgan Auditorium there at San Diego Comic-Con at 4 o'clock on Thursday. So definitely check me out in with a number of great panelists. If you want to, but if you want to just listen to the podcast, check out underratedmoviepodcast.com. It's got all the links there.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moveyourminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moveyourminute@moveyourob.net. So, Derek, you feel like coming back to try and get through another 5 minutes of this movie tomorrow?
What if I was just like, no? Yeah,
You
I'm
can say
down. I'm
no.
down.
You can say
No,
no.
no, I am absolutely down.
I'll find someone else, you know. There
I
are a
am
lot of
all, I
gluttons
am
for
all.
punishment out there, not just us. All right, so until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.